From Rochester, New York, this is Mad Dog Movies, Episode 1, Introductory Ramblings. This is the premiere episode of Mad Dog Movies. We're broadcasting from Rochester, New York.
Woo-hoo.
This is a place we choose to live, despite the weather. My name is Mike Boas. I'm sitting here with John Vincent.
How are you, folks?
That's very nice, John.
Thank you.
John, you have some professional background experience in film, much more than I have. I'm just a lowly animator with dreams of grandeur, and you've been around. You've been to New York. You've been to California.
I have, certainly.
And why don't you tell us a couple of the movies you've worked on in the past and what you've done?
Well, I think probably the most popular one would be called The Refrigerator, which I just happened to get. Actually, my sister got. She found it on the internet. It was the first professional, quote-unquote, film I ever worked on where I got a screen credit on a feature film. I was going to Brooklyn College Film School, and a friend of mine, two people I know, both from Rochester, Mike Dupre and Trez Dupre. We're working on this movie, and Trez Dupre has become quite the production designer. Look her name up on the internet, and you'll see all the kind of stuff she's done. They gave me a call saying they needed some help doing the makeup effects stuff. So I was a college student, went and helped. And if you've ever seen the movie, and I doubt that you have.
I've never seen it even. Now that you've got a copy of it, I'll have to borrow it.
Yeah, there's a wonderful scene where the refrigerator is moving around the floor, and I am behind the refrigerator pushing it around.
So. And if you look very carefully, you can see, what, your hand?
Well, I looked. I didn't see it this time, so they must have cut it out.
Oh.
Yeah, but I'm surprised. They had to cut around it because they could see my hands in the dailies, so they must have... Must have worked around that one. Plus, a lot of blood work. There was a ton of blood involved.
So that was shot in New York?
That was shot in New York City in a warehouse. I think it was in Brooklyn.
And then it ended up on, Cinemax or HBO. And,
well, the weird thing about it was...
It was direct to video. I mean,
it went to, let's see, we shot it. It's got to be in the mid to late 80s. Mm-hmm. And I had not quite forgotten about it, but it was way in the back of my mind. And about 5 years after we'd worked on the picture, I was watching CNN, Showbiz Today. And on comes the scene.
I remember that show.
They still have the show. On comes the scene that I rigged up where the refrigerator is crushing this guy and the blood's flying all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. How does this film get on Showbiz Today? Well, not long after
that.
Was
it like an anti-violence piece? Now let's take a look at the horrible movies that Hollywood is putting out.
Well, the movie itself was just basically a satire. Didn't take itself very seriously at all. It was kind of fun. And it ended up playing on HBO and Cinemax and cable for quite some time. And in fact, to a certain point, more people have seen my name on that movie than some of the other sort of larger stuff that I've done.
Yeah, I mean, usually, you tell people things you worked on. You talk about either recent productions in Rochester or you talk about stuff from Full Moon. It's not like Refrigerator is at the top of your resume.
Yeah, and I don't even think it's on DVD at the time right now. So it's going to be hard-pressed to find it. I was surprised my sister found it.
Did you find a VHS on
eBay?
She
found a VHS either on Amazon or eBay or something. I'm not really sure. But so that was kind of fun. So we got together and watched it and had a big laugh.
I guess you could talk a little bit about what we're going to do with the show. Our idea is to go over different aspects of filmmaking. And, you've had your hand in a few different things. We're working on a feature film right now in pre-production. As we work on different parts of that movie, we can talk about what we're doing on it, either specifics or general. And we can have guests in, people who are working with us or you know from the past. There's a lot of local guys in Rochester who, are craftspeople that have been working in film and video for a long time. And
yeah, I'd like to have a forum where people can call, call. But until we get that set up, email us with questions about filmmaking.
Email us at feedback@maddogmovies.com. That's feedback@maddogmovies.com.
Mm-hmm. From everything from visual effects to art department to sound to editing, and we like to answer your questions. I mean, there seems to be more lately, but when I was starting in the film business, there was almost nothing to help independent filmmakers out. You know, I had to find as many books. I had made a lot of phone calls. And
right. This is, you know, before the internet made everything easy. But
there was no, this is before our vice president, the ex-vice president invented the, yes, invented the internet.
Exactly. So.
When I started, kind of starting to date myself a little bit,
yeah,
but computers were not a big part of the film business. They had just started coming in for using stuff for motion control. If you remember Star Wars and you know how they did the Star Wars stuff, and it was just real simple computer stuff to move cameras around.
Right, right.
But for compositing, everything was all optical printers. I used to work at a company called David Allen Productions, and we did all the visual effects for Full Moon. The Puppet Master movies, Dr. Mordred,
right.
Prehysteria, et cetera, et cetera. Everything was all optical. I mean, we shot with a Mitchell 35 cameras and against blue screens. And even our cameras weren't computer controlled at the time I was there. We had to map things out, map camera moves and... And,
wait, were you able to repeat camera moves then without a, you couldn't not?
Well, we weren't able to repeat moves so much, but the moves themselves, you know, like today, if you're going to do a camera move with any kind of stop motion, we did a lot of stop motion animation.
Right.
What we do is we'd have a dolly track.
Yeah.
And we'd actually have masking tape along the dolly track with marks, and we'd have our fairings or slow in, slow outs. If you know what those are.
To ease in and ease out so that you're not just suddenly starting, stopping.
Exactly.
Which you wouldn't want anyway.
And that was all calculated by hand.
So you'd move it a notch, take your picture, move it a notch, take your picture.
We'd actually be moving it as the picture was being taken.
Oh, so that wasn't stop motion.
It was stop motion. So we'd back the camera up just the previous notch.
Yeah.
And as the camera approached the next notch, the frame was exposed.
Right. So you get a little bit of blur.
So it'd have a little bit of motion blur.
So, yeah. I first heard about that with Phil Tippett's AT-ATs in Empire Strikes Back.
Mm-hmm.
And he called it Go Motion. I don't know if that's like an industry name.
Go Motion was it was a combination of a couple of things. Go Motion was a combination of stop motion, traditional stop motion, and computerized movements for some of the larger movements of the creature.
So they had
rods attached to the appendages of the puppet.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And so what they would do is they'd pre-plan all the movements.
Yeah.
So that, for instance, in Dragon Slayer, the wings and everything, that was all programmed in the computer. But the head and some of the smaller movements were still stop motion animation. So the animator would go in there, he'd move the head, let's say, open the jaw a little bit, take a frame, but as the frame was being taken, the wings and anything that else was going to move during the frame was moving through a system of rods connected to these servos.
Okay, I was always thinking it was just moving the camera during the wings.
The body of the puppet and like the wings are all connected to these rods, and they would move during the frame exposure to give that motion blur. And that was kind of like, you consider that like an in-between the stuff that we initially did, the stop motion starting back with Willis O'Brien, The Lost World and King Kong.
Right.
And then the transition from that to, of course, the stuff that ended up in Jurassic Park, which was basically, a lot of it was not just CG, but there was a device input.
The DID.
The DID, looked like a stop motion armature of a T-Rex, but it had a lot of sensors on it. And as the animator... Mm-hmm. Randy Dutra, I think, was the one who was doing a lot of that animation at the time.
If you say so, I haven't heard that name. But
Industrial Light and Magic.
Yeah.
And, you know, the movements of the puppet were recorded into the computer.
That was a transition period, Jurassic Park was, you know. And, you know, you go from the Phil Tippett stuff in the 80s where they were improving Go Motion, improving it, and, you know, right up through... What, like RoboCop 2 had some great animation in it. I don't know.
Phil Tippett did all the Go Motion stuff for that, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and when they got to Jurassic Park, they did tests, let's do it all Go Motion, and then they did CG and looked at them side by side. And they wanted to go CG, but they wanted Tippett's crew of animators who knew stop motion animation to come at it. So then that's when they come up with the puppet.
I was working at David Allen's, David Allen Productions, when we were doing... I can't remember if it was Robot Wars or Dr. Mordred, mm-hmm. or maybe Priestier. I can't remember. It's been so long.
Did you have stop motion on both those? Or?
That was stop motion in everything.
Yeah.
In all those films.
Yeah.
And Jurassic Park, we heard, was coming out. And yeah. we're all like, oh, my God. Because, of course, the mainstay of what we did there was puppet animation, stop motion photography. Mm-hmm. And the film came out, Jurassic Park, we all went and saw it and went, oh, man.
That's the end of
there
us.
There it goes. And I packed my bags not long after that, moved back to Rochester to try to become an independent filmmaker right. as opposed to just a visual effects artist.
Right. But what's interesting to me is I remember seeing the behind-the-scenes stuff on that DID device and thinking, wow, that's cool. It's a way for stop-motion guys who don't know how to use, you know, Maya or whatever CG program mm-hmm. to actually interface with a computer. But I haven't heard anything about that since. Does anybody do anything like
I haven't either. I don't believe so.
I don't believe so. Maybe it wasn't as good as people thought, or maybe...
Which is a shame, because unless, you know, the big problem I have with CG, mm-hmm. unless you're Industrial Lights and Magic, yeah. and you spend, I mean, well, millions of dollars. I mean, you look at the credits on the, yep. the people that do CG.
Yeah.
It's crazy. When I was in the business and before I was in the business, mm-hmm. Guys like Ray Harryhausen, he had maybe an assistant or two doing all the stuff for, you know, all the films, all the Sinbad films, and Jason the Argonauts.
Yeah.
Jim Dansforth, who was probably, as far as I'm concerned, probably the best stop motion animator in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It was just him.
Yeah.
Basically, David Allen. For a long time, was him and a few of us. I mean, I think at any one time, working on a film like Robot Wars, 7-8 people tops mm-hmm. doing the effects for that. I mean, it was a small film.
Well, recent stop motion movies. You know, you got your Corpse Bride, the Wallace and Gromit movie, the Chicken Run. They're yeah. under a time crunch, so they have to hire a lot of outside animators and bring uh-huh. them in. They got multiple teams, multiple versions of the same set just to get everything yeah. done. Yeah.
Our friend Teresa Drilling
yeah,
from exactly. Rochester, I went to RET with, is one of the key animators
yep,
on that.
On Wallace and Gromit, yep. Yeah. And it could be one or two people working for, I don't know, 4, 5, 10 years, but they don't do it that way. They want to get them out faster than that.
Yeah, well, Ray Harryhausen took quite a long time to do Jason the Argonauts. I mean, especially the skeleton.
It's not 90 minutes of straight animation either.
No, it's not, but it's just him. And if you look at the skeleton sequence, mm-hmm. which is probably the pinnacle
yeah.
of this style of art / technology.
It's insane. You'd have multiple skeletons.
Seven skeletons and yeah. all the appendages on all seven skeletons and him trying to keep track of that all himself.
Yeah.
You know, I think the most that he did in terms of having other people help, if I'm not mistaken, is he had people dressed and numbered
yeah.
and acting as the skeletons on film. And then he mimicked, to a degree,
right,
their
right.
moves.
Not rotoscope.
It's
but
not
but
rotoscope
at least
so much,
it as
but
a
it's
reference.
A key references. Yeah. So
well, they almost had to do that.
High point of their technology. You know?
They had to do that for the other actors to know who their shadow boxing
that had
against.
To, yeah, that had to be. I forgot the actor who played Jason, but yeah.
Yeah, everyone's forgotten.
Yeah.
I don't know what I mean. Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. So all that stuff had to be choreographed. I mean, today it still has to be choreographed. I mean, yeah. that hasn't changed so much. But, I mean, you know, for Jason the Argonauts, I mean, that was, for people who don't know how that stuff was done, yeah. you basically have your live-action footage that you shot and they're called background plates. Mm-hmm. And then we literally would set up a rear projection screen. So you had a movie screen, a translucent movie screen with an image being shown on the back of the screen,
and
which
is
appeared on the front. Right. And yeah. and the simple thing is a one frame of the live action would be up on there, and the stop motion puppet would be in front of the screen, and then the camera would be recording the two images together. Mm-hmm. It gets more complicated than that in terms of, really doing mats and traveling mats and things like that. But essentially, that's what the technology was. And then you move the animation yeah. puppet to match the next frame of what the actor was doing.
And a lot of that was, I mean, Harryhausen.
And that was the pinnacle of the technology for years.
He didn't really invent it, but boy, he pushed it. And
he did
things with it that even Willis O'Brien
Well, yeah, Willis
done.
O'Brien first developed that, for, the basic yeah, technique yeah.
King Kong, you watch the extras.
Well, before
on
King Kong, yeah, really? He did Lost World. He did the Lost World, and those were basic front and rear projection images, a combination of that and matte paintings, mm-hmm. which are essentially oil painting on glass.
Yeah.
And then you shoot through the glass to see the things behind. And then when King Kong came along, that was just blew everybody's minds out of the water. I mean, right. That movie alone
just
saved RKO Pictures during the Depression because it was such a
right.
such a huge hit.
What I like about that is you look at that and it's treating live action elements in an animation sort of frame of mind too. You know, you got your mat, you got your live action, you've got then a foreground miniature maybe, you've got
multi-level. Yeah, there's many levels. I mean, I'm trying to think, the exact number escapes me, but when King Kong was on the Empire State Building, you saw Manhattan in the background. That was all multiple levels of paintings on glass, one after the other. For some reason, I think 8 comes to mind, but it could be wrong on that. But that technology is no longer used, and it's unfortunate.
In some ways, it makes more sense. You can have more chances to fix things and change things if you have all your layers and, you know, a digital program like After Effects. And that's my point of view.
I agree. I mean, what we're doing is a combination of traditional techniques alongside modern, which I think, you know, I mean, to me, you know, for instance, for Lake Midnight, which is a working title of the film that we're putting together, written by Mike and myself, it is going to have some pretty good effects in it, but they're going to be traditional in the sense that we're not using computer generated imagery.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be using computer aided composition.
So you shoot your
compositing,
maybe a monster. We're going to do things with a live puppet, not a stop motion.
We're going to shoot it's an animatronic rod puppet. It's basically a quarter scale.
Yeah.
A 4-foot tall puppet that is very Cthulhu like. Mm-hmm. It's got tentacles. It's kind of bizarre looking.
Personally, I think it's more like Yogg-Sothoth. But
you need a tissue for that? Bless you. But so basically, we're going to shoot that up against a combination of a blue screen, and we're going to do what we call a foreground miniature or hanging miniature shots.
Right.
Which means is the miniatures are close to the camera lens.
Mm-hmm.
The real sets and possibly some of the actors will be in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Pretending to look up at the puppet.
Something that they did a lot with size, the size doubles. Not doubles. I'm talking about Lord of the Rings.
They did the Lord of the Rings. Yeah.
You'd have Ian McKellen and then, what's his name, Frodo, doesn't matter, in the same shot, but they'd be...
Right. They weren't really next to each other.
Right.
10 feet away from each other or something. Right. But then they were pretending to look at each other. So if you looked at that setup off axis from the camera lens...
Yeah.
Visually, it would make absolutely no sense.
If you could do as much of that in camera as possible, it doesn't seem as fake.
No, it doesn't seem as fake, and it also helps the director and know exactly what he has right away.
You know, of course, we've got the added bonus of video playback, so you watch the take.
Video assist. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Who was the first one to use video assist?
Geez, was it Harryhausen?
No. I mean, just in general. This is, at least he claims to have.
Oh, right. Coppola.
Nope.
Damn it, man.
Jerry Lewis.
Jerry Lewis. I didn't hear that.
Jerry Lewis claims, and he may be right, but they used a form of video assist very early on, and I forget which film it was.
I thought of Coppola because in One from the Heart, they called it like the Silverfish, which is a trailer. Uh-huh. Where he had like all his video monitors, and sometimes he wouldn't be on the set. He'd be off in the trailer watching the, and so it kind of put a distance between him and the actors, but he was sort of at the cutting edge of getting all the playback
to work.
Well,
you know, I mean, that's going to be an advantage. We're going to be shooting this in high def with a camera that I can't speak enough about, but the Panasonic HVX200, which enables
us. It's a very popular camera right now.
Which enables us to shoot high speed, which is very important. So because we're shooting miniatures.
Yeah.
In order for them to look real, you have to shoot high speed, which means is you have to shoot slow motion to slow down their body movements and to slow down, you know, for instance, things that are falling off the body, for instance.
Right.
They fall at a specific speed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just record it in, you know, just at 24 frames, which is normal frames, it looks like a miniature. It looks like a small little thing running around.
Right.
But you shoot it at high speed. Mm-hmm. Say, you know, a puppet this size will shoot at about 50 frames a second, and it plays back at 24 frames, and it gives it a much more of an idea of mass and, you know, in size.
And that's something that this HD camera can give you, which is a
variable speed. Which is for a camera, you know, that's less than $8,000, you know, for everything that you get with a camera and the need with the camera, it's quite remarkable. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I started out doing stuff, I mean, like, you know, I said we shot with 35 millimeter Mitchell cameras, no video assist, and these cameras are in fact rack over cameras, which means we had to set the shots up looking through a viewfinder, and then we have a lever that we turn the lever and the camera body would slide in behind the lens.
Yeah.
So
you'd think there'd be some jiggle sometimes.
Mitchells are probably the Mitchells, and there was a Bell and Howell camera.
Yeah.
That the registration was just perfect.
Oh, that's good.
Absolutely perfect.
Hope you enjoyed Mad Dog Movies. If you'd like to know more about us, you can visit our website at maddogmovies.com/podcast.
And if you'd like to take a look at our website, philrosefilms.com, you'll be able to see a lot of the visual effects we've done in the past, some of the art department stuff we've done on features, and find out the latest news about films we're working on, like Lake Midnight and other projects. That's philrosefilms, philrosefilms.com.
And if you want to write to either John or myself, you can write to feedback@maddogmovies.com.
I'm telling you, Ungots.
The good news is we can record something. The bad news is you just can't hear it while we're recording.
Yeah, let's see. Okay, now, there we go. So, recording. And it goes away because I just moved the cord. So, okay, there we go. And why don't you go ahead and talk?
I am now speaking to you through my own vocal cords.
And me too.
I think I'm hearing myself in the left speaker again, though, on the right.
Well, I'm hearing...
Maybe it's because you're... No, I don't hear anything in the right. Oh, well.
Testicles, 1, 2, 3.
All right.
You never know.
So this is it. This is the show.
Yeah. Marvelous. I'm sure this is worth the anticipation.
At this point, I'm all burnt out.
Yeah.
I got nothing left.
You want to just keep this thing rolling or...
Keep it rolling. And we can go for like 40 minutes before the computer crashes, probably.
Oh, that's delightful.
Music for this episode was provided by Keith Handy. Visit him online at keithhandy.com.
We'll cut this part out. You don't have to be funny anymore.